Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Akanksha Arora.
Just a few weeks before that, a friend of mine told me she was in a poly relationship. I don't know if his other partner likes me. Maybe we need to get together and bake him a cake. That's a scam.
That and more. But first, this episode you're about to hear is all stories that were told at our LA Live show. But you could be right there at our next Risk Live show in LA on November 19th. That is at the Lyric Hyperion, and tickets are at risk-show.com/live.
We'll be right back.
Now here's the show. Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. This is Jaubi behind me now, and we're calling this week's episode live from LA 4. I'll tell you, we've been talking lately about taking the show on the road again. It's been a long time since Risk was anywhere other than New York or LA. And we might just give it a go again next year, getting out there on the road. But in the meantime, let's check in with our show in LA. As you probably know, our LA show is hosted by the beloved David Crabb. So at the very end of this episode, we added a little extra treat, a tidbit from his hosting of a recent show. And in a little bit, we're also going to hear from Frank Trainer. But before that, a story from Akanksha Arora. She is a writer and comedian based in LA, and here is Akanksha Arora now with a story we call Deviant.
So the story I'm about to tell you today, it is a love story, but it's not a story about the one, okay? In fact, he's polyamorous, so I'm one of many. A shareholder, if you will. But before we get into all of that, let me take you back to the night that I met him. So I had just turned 30, and things weren't really going that well for me, okay? All I had to really show for it was adult acne, a Lexapro prescription, and a highly embarrassing 9-to-5 writing YouTube videos for iPad babies. Yeah, and, you know, people would tell me, it's okay to be in that place, it's okay to be paycheck to paycheck, but for me, it really wasn't. Because, like Gail said, I'm an immigrant. I'm supposed to be exceptional. Like, by 30, I thought that I would have, you know, I would wake up in a matching pajama set and have, like, a six-figure job and wake up, go to work, and kiss my white husband on the way out. I didn't have any of that stuff. But what I did have was a date with a guy that I met on an app called Field. So, I don't know if anyone here has heard of Field, a mixed crowd, but I'll explain. Field is a kink app. I would say it's a hookup app, but that would really be putting it mildly. Field is the kind of app where no one actually uses their real name, and it's totally normal for someone to have a bio that is like, looking for a dirty little slut to walk around in a dog leash. That's normal for Field. Yeah, and I don't consider myself a Field kind of person, but I had a friend, yes, a white friend, who encouraged me to download Field. Because she was like, you just need to let loose a little bit. You just need to go out there and have a little fun. And for me, in theory, that made sense. But in practice, I always had a really hard time separating sex from love. You see, I grew up in Bombay in the peak era of the Bollywood rom-com. And I was used to a certain vision of love. I was pretty much primed to crave it and aspire to it because love was just this amazing thing. Like, love was like flowering fields and like flowing saris and like prolific monologues from this perfect man who would just hop out and dance with you in the rain. And love was also dramatic. There were grand gestures. Like, the same man who popped out in the rain would, in the next scene, be dancing on a train, running through the airport, just letting you know how much he loved you. And I guess the ultimate goal for an Indian woman was to find a love like that and then follow it all the way to its shining destination, marriage. So I saw a lot of love, I guess, but I didn't really see much in terms of what happened after that. I didn't really see any relationships or marriages at all, actually, except the one that I had at home, my parents. So my parents, whose marriage was arranged by their parents, they were really lacking in the representing love department, okay? They fought a lot, and they fought about everything. It could be as small as one wrong look, or it could be as big as a missed paycheck. Their fights, they didn't really stay in the realm of verbal. Sometimes they got physical. They threw plates at each other. There was blood splatters. It was ugly. And they both cried. They both cried a lot. And they cried to me. They'd tell me, like, you know, all I really want for you is that someday you find a really nice man and you settle down. And I hope that your life doesn't turn out like this. little mixed messaging, right, between the movies and that. So obviously, with that mixed messaging, I became an adult and I formed a very twisted sort of definition of love. It was kind of this all-consuming, beautiful thing, like a whole reason to live if you had it, but it was a reason to die if it ever threatened to leave. So, needless to say, my dating experiences after that were pretty confusing. I had all kinds of crazy that I was yet to discover because I left India when I was 17. And that was just a weird age developmentally to leave the country and then become a woman in another country while still being kind of bound emotionally to what you learned in the first country. So I didn't find my flowering fields and my flowing saris, and I was kind of starting to just give up on it. But then, you know, the white friend suggested Field, and I downloaded it because she said, forget about the whole love thing. Just go have some fun. Great, that's easy for someone who watched Sex and the City all their lives to say. But whatever, I kept an open mind. I downloaded the app. And within two swipes on the app, I saw someone so hot that I understood. This man is just gorgeous, okay? He had like these long flowing locks and he had, you know, the V-cut peeking out above the sweatpants and beautiful face, straight teeth. I was like, okay. I looked at him and I was like, I know two things for certain. Number one, this man is a demon. Number two, he looks like ASAP Rocky, and if we match, I'm gonna fuck the shit out of him. I feel like this is a room that doesn't really know what ASAP Rocky looks like, so. I think you should all go Google it after the show. But yeah, okay, so I'm on the bus and I'm on the way to this date, And I just have this overwhelming shame where I'm just like, what am I actually doing? Like, I'm 30, and there's unfolded laundry on the floor of my room that I should be worrying about. I should probably get another job. Like, what am I actually doing as an immigrant on a Wednesday night going to meet some random himbo at a bar? What am I actually doing? And I don't know, I was also just like physically uncomfortable. You know, I was wearing jeans that were too tight and a shirt that was too short. And there was rolls in my belly that really weren't there 2 years ago. So I get to the bar and I see him. He's sitting there with his big hands wrapped around a whiskey glass. And oh my God, I just took a second to like admire him. Because he's so pretty. And you got to understand, my dating history before him was just a bunch of white guys with four-letter names. And they looked like it. So I approached him, gave him a little awkward first date side hug. He bought me a drink. And we get to talking. We make all the small talk. He's from Chicago. Awesome city. Yeah, he has paint on his jeans because he's an artist. So far, so harmless, so hot. And then he looks at me, and I'm halfway through my drink, and he says, "So, are you poly?" And I physically recoiled because I've been warned about poly men in Los Angeles. I've been warned that there is an uptick in men in Los Angeles who are co-opting the progressive language of polyamory to, you know, just fuck around and do it without accountability. And I 100% thought that he was one of them. And I was like, no, and I'm not going to be recruited to your polycule. Because I'd heard the horror stories. Like, just a few weeks before that, a friend of mine told me, oh, she was in a poly relationship. I don't know if his other partner likes me. Maybe we need to get together and bake him a cake. And I was like, that's a scam. Over my dead body, would I ever do something like that? Bake a cake for his with his other bitch? No. So I'm here, like, all stressed because I'm thinking about the cake. And he was like, well, that's okay. We can still hang out. He was like, you don't have to be poly. But, you know, down the line, if our connection grows. And I cut him off and I was like, our connection will not grow because you're poly. And I don't fuck with that. I don't do that. I don't want to be invited to the gangbangs. I don't want to... Here's me and here's the polycule. I'm polycule adjacent. I'm never in the polycule. You got it? And very calmly, he was like, okay, miss. And I hated that. I hated how calm he was. It's the kind of calm that a man has from getting a lot of pussy. I was like, this is awful. Like, I can't believe how bad my love life has gotten that I'm sitting here at Formosa Cafe drinking a tiki drink with a self-proclaimed man whore. Whatever, he's so hot though. So I get to the bottom of the tiki drink and I look at him and he looks at me and it's on. Okay, we're making out. We were in his car, we're on the way to my apartment, and I uncharacteristically tried to give him head on the way home in the car. Yeah, and he was like, you're gonna get us both killed. And I was like, yeah, great way to die. I was already surprised by myself because, again, I wasn't super into the whole casual relationship thing. But I don't know, it was something about him that just came over me. So we get to the apartment and we waste no time, okay? I peel his shirt off, I look at the beautiful abs and the little V-cut in person, even better in person, by the way. And as I'm leaning in to like lick his abs, I notice an interesting tattoo. Yeah, there on his waist from left to right, right above his dick, in big gothic letters, was a word. And the word, you'll be charmed to find out, was deviant. And I was like, wow, that is the hottest red flag. I have ever seen. I throw this man down on the bed and I write his face surrounded by the piles of dirty laundry. I don't care. Yeah, we keep going. It's great. One time, two time, three times. And then finally, when we're done, he's like putting his boxers back on and he looks at me with like a question in his eyes and he goes, "What is your name?" And I look at him and I'm like, it's a Akanksha. And I don't know why I even told him, because he's not going to remember that. I have one of those names that has a lot of consonants and it confuses Americans. Why did he even ask? So I was like, it's a Akanksha. And then he took my hand so politely, as if he hadn't done everything he'd just done to me. And he said, "I'm Troy." And that, I thought, was going to be the end of that. But then I saw Troy the next week. Then I saw Troy the week after that. Then I saw Troy 2 weeks later when he came over to where I was cat-sitting, and the cats liked him more than me. Real pussy whisperer, this guy. And Troy just kind of kept showing up in my life. And he kept showing up for long enough that I couldn't keep the cool girl act up anymore. I couldn't keep being like, yeah, it's cool. We fuck. It's cool. You don't, like, do eye contact during missionary or anything. It's cool. I couldn't really keep that up anymore. I think my crazy had just started to show. Because if you really think about my really messed up programming of love, I technically am an adult woman, but really I was an ache, like a wound, an unhealed child in a grown woman's body, like bursting at the seams with love, but starving for it at the same time. And this began to show. I just started to think he was going to ghost me. I just started to think he was just not going to come back anymore or not text me anymore. And weirdly enough, I tried to start text fights about it. Now, text fights are how all my previous relationships ended. But Troy wouldn't let me start text fights. Every time I tried to, he would say, "Hey, get on FaceTime." And we would talk. And it would be resolved. And this was just so new for me. I was used to chaos. I was used to fighting. I had internalized it more, perhaps, than I had internalized the love and romance of those Bollywood movies. I had internalized fighting. And over time, I realized I was wrong about what I said to him on our first date, that our connection can't grow. Because over the last year or so, it has. And I know what you're thinking. You're probably hoping that he and I end up in love and happily ever after. No. No, that's not what happens. Our relationship, or if I'm using the technical term, situationship, is still very casual and sexy and fun. But weirdly, there's a lot more emotional safety in it than I've probably experienced with a monogamous man that I dated before him, whose only job was to date me. So I guess this relationship and this love has really changed me in a lot of ways, but it doesn't mean that my crazy goes away. Troy's just good at dealing with it, because I'm not the only one who's crazy he's dealing with. This is just like an aside, really. It's not even part of this piece, but a couple weeks ago, he picked up another job, and I thought, okay, that's the end, right? I'm not going to see him. He has two jobs and about as many girlfriends. I don't know if I'm the favorite. So I think that he's ghosting me. And I do stand-up, so I was at this horrible stand-up show. One of those stand-up shows where every single comic is bad. You question why you ever started doing stand-up. You question everything about it, whether it's even an art form anymore. It was an astrology-themed show. Sure, yeah. Yeah, so LA. And everybody was going up there and saying that they hate different astrology signs, right? And Libra men were on the chopping block. They were like, oh, screw Libra men. They're the worst. They're the worst. They're the worst. And I go up and I'm like, I'm seeing a Libra man. And someone in the audience heckled me and goes, why, girl? Why? And I was like, because he looks like ASAP Rocky. And it's big as an Arizona iced tea. Now, after the show was over, I get off, I'm about to leave with my friend. And who walks up but Troy? He was there. He was just hiding in the audience the entire time. And if I ever needed any proof that someone loves me, if they sat through 8 really, really bad comics making jokes about astrology just to see me, then they probably do. And there was something very healing about that experience for me because my wiring is pretty strong. It's not just going to go away. I expect abandonment and chaos and drama. And Troy always gives me love. He always just shows up. And he's no sensitive, prolific Bollywood lover. He's just a man with the word deviant tatted above his dick.
Come in! Well, 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 look who's here! I haven't seen you in many a year. If I knew you were coming, I'd bake a cake, bake a cake, bake a cake. If I knew you were coming, I'd bake a cake. Hatchy-do, hatchy-do, hatchy-do. Had you dropped me a letter, I'd have hired a band, grandest band in the land. Had you dropped me a letter, I'd have hired a band and spread the welcome mat for you. Oh, I don't know where you came from, 'cause I don't know where you've been. But it really doesn't matter. Grab a chair and fill your platter and dig, dig, dig right in. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake, hired a band, goodness sake. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake. Hot-cha-do, hot-cha-do, hot-cha-do. Hot-cha-do, hot-cha-do, hot-cha-do. Hot-cha-do.
We'll be right back.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
We're back.
This is Risk. This is Oren Ambarchi behind me now, and we just heard Eileen Barton singing about bacon cakes. My mom used to sing that song. But before that, we heard Aconcha Aurora, who you can find on Instagram at Bombay_satire. And she writes a Substack called The Cutting Chai. Folks, there's still time to sign up for our big trip to Portugal in May of 2025. I know it might seem that's a ways off, but we're really hoping to have things squared away very soon. So don't wait. Go to risk-show.com/Portugal if you want to take a vacation in May with me and other Risk fans. Sightseeing, sharing amazing meals, swapping stories, and celebrating our 15th anniversary. And you'll be helping to keep Risk running by being a part of it. The big original real reason for the trip is it's a fundraiser. So again, all you need to know is at risk-show.com/Portugal. Now, next, we're going to hear from Frank Trainer, who you can find on Instagram at Frank_Trainer. Here's Frank now with a story we call The Magic of Meaning.
The apartment building where I grew up in Buenos Aires, Argentina, had two brothels. One of the brothels was directly under us, like on the floor under us, but like on the opposite side of the building. So from our kitchen window, we could see their kitchen window, but also the room where the prostitutes changed and hung out, which made for some really fun, interesting weekends for me as a teenager, of course. Now, in said brothel, they also practiced this African-Brazilian religion called Umbanda. Now, I'm not really sure 100% what they do or believe, but I do know that they have rituals and they chant and I guess they invoke spirits and whatnot. All things that my mother would consider satanic. My mother was a very Catholic woman. She believed you should not fuck with the dead. Ever since I was very, very little, she loved talking to me about God and Jesus and the angels, but she also loved talking to me about Satan and the devil and demons. I guess she wanted me to have both sides of the story, which is fair, I guess, right? She also told me that ghosts are real, but not to be afraid of them, because they're just the souls of dead people and they're just stuck here and they're very afraid. Let me rephrase that. My mom thought that it was ghosts that were their scaries and not their scarers. She was the OG. I ain't afraid of no ghost, I guess. So one night in that brothel, they're having one of their ceremonies and they're chanting. And my mother is like, that's it. I'm done with this. I'm doing something about it. So my mom takes two of my nieces to the kitchen window and she starts counterattacking their chants with church hymns. It was a single for the ages. It was God versus Satan and my mom was God's champion. It's like, I'm like, I go, I came to praise God. Like, oh, Jesus, I will follow you. Like, made no fucking sense. Now, the next morning, after that battle, both our apartment doorbells ring at the same time. Now, let me explain to you first why and how we have two doorbells in our apartment in Argentina. Another truth about our building was that it was very old. So the doorbell only had like a speaker in the kitchen and you could only hear it in the kitchen. So if you were in the bedrooms, you couldn't hear it. So my parents bought this wireless modern, you know, doorbell and they put the speaker that you could put it anywhere near our bedrooms. So you could hear it. Basically, they had no connection. They had nothing in common. They were just both at the front door. One of them was old and with wires through the walls. And the other one was modern and new, and it was wireless. Most people that came to our place would, you know, ring both of them at the same time. Or in my case, I would ring one after the other constantly until somebody opened the door, annoyed at me because I had keys and I was like refusing to use them all the time. So the morning after my mom fighting with church hymns, these satanic people, I guess, both doorbells ring at the same time. And our housekeeper, who was in the kitchen, goes to the front door and asks, "Who is it?" But there's no answer. So she walks back in the kitchen, and the second she's in there, both doorbells ring again. So she goes back to the front door and asks, "Who is it?" And there's no answer. She looks through the peephole. There's no one there. So she walks back to the kitchen, and again, both doorbells ring again. So she walks back to the front door and asks again, "Who is it?" And again, there is no answer. She looks through the peephole. There's no one there. She walks back to the kitchen, and this happens a couple more times until eventually she gets tired of it, and she waits by the door. And when both doorbells ring again, she can see the shadow of the feet of whoever is standing on the other side, like through the hole, like the little space between the door and the floor. And she looks through the peephole. There's no one there. She goes, "Who is it?" There's no answer. She opens the door. There's nobody there. So she calls my mom, who comes to the front door and remembers the battle royale she had against the forces of evil the night before. And she waits for both doorbells to ring again. And she opens the door. And my mom goes, "I know what's wrong with you. You're afraid because of what happened downstairs last night. But don't worry. No one's going to hurt you here." And she like signals like to come in. And that's how my mom invited a ghost to live with us. Q80 sitcom music. Now, the other big event happening in my family's life around the same time was that my father, who had cancer a couple of years before that, and then he went to remission, my father's cancer was back. And it seemed like there was nothing that we could do about it this time, which, you know, ironically and strangely enough, while my father is dying, the soul of a dead person is already living with us. Now, the ghost is not really that bad. He, she, or they mostly just walk around the apartment. You can feel like the footsteps around the apartment. You never see anything. Sometimes you can also hear the front door opening and closing, and then the footsteps walking towards the bedroom. My entire family is terrified. They say that even my two-year-old niece, one time my mom was looking after her because my sister had to run some errands or whatever, and my two-year-old niece was with my mom in the bedroom, and they hear the front door opening and closing and the footsteps coming to the bedroom. And my niece gets up from the bed and goes, "Mommy!" But no one arrived because no one had entered the apartment. My dad also told me that a couple of times when he was early in the morning in the kitchen ironing his shirt to go to work, he would hear what he thought was my mom coming from the bedroom, opening and closing the door, getting the newspaper, then walking back to the bedroom, only for my dad to then finish ironing his shirt and going to the bedroom to get dressed, to find that my mom was still in bed, sleeping, and no one had gone pick up the paper from the door. I honestly never really hear anything, but I'm still terrified of the ghost. The first night that I had to stay alone in the apartment because my dad was in the hospital dealing with his health and my mom was with him, I slept in my parents' bedroom with the door shut and the TV on all night at full volume because I refuse to hear this ghost walking around the apartment. Because what if I hear the footsteps and then I know that the ghost is out there and I get a heart attack out of the fear and then I'm the one who dies? Like, I'm expecting my dad, maybe he could die, like, that's a fear that I have, but I don't want me to die. I'm not counting on that. There's enough death here already. Everyone is afraid of it. I'm terrified of it. We're all terrified of it. Maybe we're choosing to be afraid of a ghost instead of facing the fear of our own father's imminent death. This happens for some months, goes on for some months. Everyone is terrified. I'm terrified. My dad is like, "I don't really care about it. He's just walking around where I'm ironing my shirts." But eventually my dad is like, seeing everyone so afraid that he's like, "Okay, I'm going to get rid of this ghost." I'm like, "Finally, thank you, Dad. Oh my God." Now, The closest thing to a Ghostbuster we have in our family is my uncle. My uncle has some sort of rank in the Catholic Church. I'm not sure which one it is. He's not a priest. He's not, I don't know, he has some powers. They're not really that useful. He's like the Aquaman of the clergy, basically. Like, he's there. But one of the powers, apparently, is, you know, getting rid of ghosts in places. Which, by the way, growing up, my mom also told me that the events of the movie The Exorcist could happen for real, which is why I never watched that movie. And I'm like, that's going to happen to us any minute now. So can we do something about this ghost? So here comes my uncle, and I'm like waiting. This should be like, oh my God, Bill Murray. Just like, don't cross the streams or something like that. But no, my uncle just walks around the apartment, just like sprinkling holy water in each room. And that's about it. Again, not the experience the movie Ghostbusters promised me, but I'll take it, because apparently it worked. And the ghost was gone. A couple months later, on Saturday, April 9th, 2003, my father finally dies in his bedroom, surrounded by his entire family. And the moment that he dies, at 1:47 a.m., my entire family starts to cry and hug, but not me. I walk to the TV my dad has in the bedroom, and I grab the clock that he has on top of the TV, and I remove the batteries to stop it at the time when he died. Now, this is not like a custom, like a cultural thing in Argentina that we do. I just like watching a lot of movies all the time, and I've seen this done in a lot of movies. And I'm a very dramatic person, so I need to give things like extra meaning all the time. Or as kids nowadays say, I'm a Scorpio. So I just grab the clock and I stop it when my father died at 1:47 in the morning. And then I join my family in crying and hugging. Now, after my father's death, my mom and I moved to a new apartment, smaller, better for us, just the two of us. And time goes by for about a year, and we try to live normal lives. My mom basically deals with grief her own way, by which I mean she drinks a tall glass of whiskey all the way to the top while making dinner, and then she drinks an entire bottle of wine while having dinner. Fun evenings with my mom. And I deal with grief my own way, by which I mean that I try to make every situation when somebody brings up my dad as awkward as possible. One time I run into one of my cousin's friends, and she's like, oh my God, we just moved into the apartment where you sleep with your family, like with my family now. And I'm like, oh really? You know, we used to have a ghost in that apartment. But don't worry, my uncle got rid of it. And no, it wasn't the experience the movie Ghostbusters promised me, but it's fine, don't worry about it. Now, my dad did die there afterwards in one of the bedrooms, so if you see a ghost, it's maybe my dad. I never saw my cousin's friend ever again after that. And then time kept going by, and eventually arrived the first anniversary of my father's death. The night before, my mom and I are in bed, pretty late, and we hear this really loud thud in the living room. And I go like, Mom, what was that? From my bed. And from her bed, my mom goes like, I don't know, but don't worry about it. We'll check it in the morning. Now, I know that normal smart people would get up and go see what the hell happened in their living room at one, and in the, late at night, in the, you know, but my mom and I, for some reason, we were like, no, this is fine. Don't worry about it. The next morning of my father's first anniversary of his death, my mom wakes me up screaming from the living room. So I get up and I go to the living room and I find my mom, and I see that the clock that was hanging on the wall, not the same clock that I stopped when my father died and that I still had in my bedroom with me stopped, this clock was always on the wall in the apartment where I lived with my dad and now in the new apartment, and for some reason in the middle of the night, it fell, and the batteries came off, and the batteries were on the table, as if somebody had picked them up and put them there, one next to the other. I love that I'm trying to scare you, people, because I'm usually doing comedy, and they're like, that's funny! And I see the clock, and I go to my bedroom, and I get the clock that I stopped when my father died, and I bring it to the living room, and I show it to my mom. And both clocks on April 1st, I mean 9th, are stopped at 1:47 a.m. I'm an atheist. I don't believe there is a God, or at least not the gods that human beings made up. I don't know what happens after you die. All I know is that if we want to still be here after we die, the only way to do that is if we are remembered by those who loved us. I'm not telling you that really there was a ghost in our apartment, or that my father's ghost visited us on the anniversary of his death. I'm telling you that maybe, just maybe, in an unspoken agreement, my family and I decided to interpret events that were not connected as if they were, because they make us remember someone we love and we miss, and it makes that person feel closer to us. And that's, to me, the magic of meaning. I still have both clocks, and they're still both stopped. And a lot of people ask me when and if I will ever start them again. And honestly, I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. But what I do know is that I ain't afraid of no ghost. Thank you.
This is the psychedelic furs behind me now. And we just heard from Frank Trainer, who you can find at itsfunnynowstorytelling.com. Folks, we rely so much on the support of our listeners. It really is what keeps Risk running. So if you haven't visited us over at patreon.com/risk, please do. There are ad-free versions of each episode over there, plus tons of bonus stories, check-ins, and more. And if you want to make a one-time donation, that's at paypal.me/riskshow. And did you know we teach corporate storytelling workshops, storytelling for business? We've done workshops at Google, Pfizer, Citibank, Lego, Princeton University, USA Today, NYU, and more. We've done corporate workshops in London, Latvia, Amsterdam, Spain, France, and Canada. Folks, learn more at thestorystudio.org. And finally, folks, on tomorrow's episode called Bucket of Barbies, I have such a powerful conversation and hear quite a poignant story from Zerman Zane of TikTok fame. But that's tomorrow. And folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Y'all, the craziest thing happened as I was watching the Euro Cup. Like, not to ruin it if you have it on TiVo. TiVo? How old are you, sir? America. Oh, no, not America. Thanks. England. I mean, what's the diff? A lot right now. Yes, for those Europeans elections. The Brits scored 1 point. There was only one time to really get hype. I have never been in a public space where a sporting thing has happened and something has been really positive. At first I got really frightened. The energy, there was a special plastic horn that some people had. There were just lots of bells. There were screaming people. There were lots of jerseys. My nephew, who's 10 and adorable, he was wearing his jersey. He loves sports. When when England scored their 1 point, the eruption, it was so overwhelming. This man who was like 60 barreled towards our table. I was like, what the fuck? And he put his hand up, and my nephew, who's 10 years old, leaned forward in his face, put his hand up and went, ah! Ah! And they just screamed and mashed hands. Ah! And I was like, oh no! It was so intense, and I was like, I like that. Like, I got it. I was like, yes, sports. This is what, it's community. It's excitement. I'm catching vibes. It was amazing. So anyway, if any of y'all gonna want to go watch some ball with me anytime soon, I'm your man. It was delightful. Are y'all ready to meet and hear our first storyteller? Are you? Yeah? Yeah? My nephew, I was like, are you hurt? And he just like, no, I made a friend. I love that guy. And I'm like, wow. Age is a construct when soccer is at play.